are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here we are, another Locked On crossover podcast. I'm with Grant Goldberg of Locked On Seahawks. I am Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers. You can find me at BD Peacock on Twitter. Of course, LockedOn49ers.com. Grant, how are you doing, man? Tell the listeners where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me at Grant Goldberg on Twitter. You can find the show's Twitter at Locked Seahawks. And we're all accessible. You can throw any questions you have over at our Twitter handles, and we'll be sure to reach back out to you guys.
So Niners Seahawks. The first thing I want to get into here with these two teams is, it's really funny because coming into the season, and it's weird that the 49ers and Seahawks haven't played yet. They're going to play two late season games here against each other. The 49ers were the team with the hype coming into the season. Take the next step, take off. Obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo hurt. That all just got thrown on its ear. The Seahawks was the team that was losing all this talent, that was on the downturn, that was supposed to crumble, and they were supposed to be bottom feeders now. And that was sort of the idea. You know, maybe that's oversimplifying things, but that was really what people thought these two teams were doing. And it turns out they're going in those opposite directions, and the Seahawks are now battling again for a playoff spot. My question to you, just first of all, is how is Pete Carroll keeping this thing together with some of the loss of talent? Obviously, the 49ers now have Richard Sherman. There's the whole Earl Thomas thing, particularly the defensive side of the ball. How is this thing still afloat and still the Seahawks in a position to do big things this year?
Well, I think it actually goes back to a little bit what Richard Sherman said, that, you know, it's a little bit more of a college mentality for younger players. You know, it gets stale for some of the veterans. And, you know, what we've seen is this influx of young talent go into the Seahawks defense and, you know, have a way larger role than years past. And so, you know, it's still a young, hungry defense, and that's what Pete Carroll thrives with. And then you take a look at the coaching staff, and Pete Carroll got his guys in there this offseason. He got Ken Norton Jr. in there as the defensive coordinator, and then you have Brian Schottenheimer running the offense. And so, you know, those are two guys that are going to go through Pete Carroll for everything. It's Pete Carroll's team through and through, and so we're really seeing a product of Carroll and his idea, how they want to play football. And, you know, obviously losing Earl Thomas changes the way you play defense a little bit, but the way they've held it together, especially with losing all this all-pro, Pro Bowl talent, it's been really spectacular to watch. Now, at times, it's been a little bit frustrating, and they've been a liability at some points in some games, but, you know, for the most part, they've been a really, really pleasant surprise, and I've had a lot of fun watching them this season.
And obviously, like one of the biggest things you can have in the NFL, it's what we're seeing. Like, the days of having just a straight-up stud defense and a mediocre quarterback and going all the way and winning a Super Bowl, it's happened quite a few times in history, but it seems like this is the type of league that's going to start happening less and less, and it's all about head coach and quarterback, and the Seahawks still have those two guys. How's Russell Wilson playing so far through 11 games?
You know, I think last year he was getting a little bit more of the notoriety because of the lack of run game that the Seahawks had. And so Russell Wilson accounted for over 80% of the Seahawks' total offense last year. And so he was, you know, put in at the forefront of, you know, MVP conversations. And, you know, when they talked about the Seahawks, they talked about Russell Wilson, and that's it. This year it's different. They've got a strong running game in the offense. And so I wouldn't say he's flying under the radar, but he's definitely not getting enough national attention in my mind. But it's simple, and it's easy to overlook Russell Wilson's stellar play when you got guys like Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, Jared Goff, all playing football at an extremely high level. But Russell Wilson's numbers are extremely close to what he did last year. He's on pace for about 37 touchdowns. He's only thrown a few picks this year, I think five. And so he's playing tremendous football. He's using his mobility more than he was at the beginning of the year. And so I know I've been super impressed by how consistent Russell Wilson's been. He still brings that You know, with Russell Wilson, you have a chance in a football game. Like, he still brings that to every game. Fourth quarter, you know, whether he can't play football for three quarters, it seems that, you know, in the fourth quarter, you're going to get a great play from Russell Wilson. I don't know if it's law at this point in the universe, but it just always seems to happen. So, you know, I've been extremely impressed by Russell Wilson as well, him and Pete Carroll both.
Yeah, and you're talking to a 49ers fan base right now over here on Locked On 49ers, and they know all too well about that magic Russell Wilson. And I think it's been nice for the 49ers fans not to have to see him so far this year. Now they get to see him twice at the end of a bad season. And so that's it would be nice if the 49ers were able to come away with a win, I think, in this lost season. At least one game against the Seahawks, I think that would make fans feel a lot better. But yeah, I don't know if it's in the cards, because I'm looking at Russell Wilson's numbers right now, by the way. You mentioned the 5 interceptions to 25 touchdowns is such a great ratio. His quarterback rating right now is 112.
Yeah.
Like, the dude is playing lights out. He's not getting any credit because some of the guys that are putting up insane numbers right now in some offenses, like you mentioned, it might be his best statistical year. I'm looking at the numbers here, 67% almost completions. He's playing great.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I think if Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, Jared Goff aren't playing as well as they are with, you know, how their team is playing, then Russell Wilson's definitely going to be, you know, in that conversation for most valuable player. But yeah, comparing it to last year, I think, you know, even this year might be a little more impressive, just how efficient he's had to be. I think the passing yards, that's always been kind of an inflated quarterback stat. It's never been my favorite, so I always, you know, carry little weight with that. I know some people might use it, you know, just for volume and and to show, you know, what a quarterback does on a week-to-week basis. But, you know, efficiency matters just as much, if not more, to me. And so, yeah, Russell Wilson's doing all this at an incredibly efficient pace, and he's just making the correct plays for the Seahawks. It's really nitpicky to look at Russell Wilson's game and say, oh, well, you know, he creates a little more pressure than he needs to, and he misses high a little bit. But, you know, for the most part, you get a spectacular player week in, week out, just makes winning plays. And I think that's what Russell Wilson's all about, just, you know, finding a way to win the game.
And when you see the names that get surrounded with him on offense, the names that are like, you know, Chris Carson comes out of nowhere, and he's a starting running back in the NFL, even over the first round pick Rashad Penny. And in the past, it was guys like Doug Baldwin, who kind of came out of nowhere. He's like, who's this Doug Baldwin guy? And he just working like goes about his business and is a really good receiver. And now there's a new guy that's popped up that I've noticed a few times. And I'm like, where do you keep finding these guys? David Moore. Tell me a little bit about young wide receiver David Moore.
Yeah, David Moore was actually a 7th round draft pick. And, you know, Chris Carson as well, they were both 7th round draft picks. But when you look at Moore, he's a guy from East Central University. He's a second year player.
That sounds fake. That sounds like a fake
exactly.
College.
Yeah, you know, as players do, you know, the NFL player factory, East Central University. he just has a knack for making these big plays. Russell Wilson is a guy that trusts all of his receivers, and I think we see that, you know, to a fault sometimes. You know, he gives 50-50 balls to guys that maybe shouldn't, but, you know, David Moore is a bona fide 50-50 ball guy. I think, you know, what embodies him as a player is just, you know, at the right time in the game, you know, he's always coming up big. I think it showed it most in the Seahawks Panthers game last Sunday when the Seahawks were down and needed a touchdown, 4th and 3. He creates enough separation, fights off the defender who is probably, you know, flagged for interference on a good day, and makes a tough grab, scores a touchdown for the Seahawks. And so, you know, he's a guy that maybe doesn't have the gaudy numbers, the big receiving yards, but he catches touchdowns, he makes plays at big moments in the game, and it's been a really welcome addition. I think when you take out Brandon Marshall from the Seahawks offense and you plug in David Moore, it's really just night and day. I mean, they're two players at different points in their career, but just in terms of fit for the offense and earning that trust from Russell Wilson and deserving that trust, I think it's two different cases, but David Moore has been really tremendous as a third receiver for the Seahawks this year.
One more quick question about the Seahawks offense before we take a break here. Rashad Penny, first round running back. It was a pick that was surprised a lot of people. I didn't see quite a first round running back in Rashad Penny, especially the second running back off the board after Saquon Barkley. It was a really good class of running backs, and he hasn't really taken over that running back spot, but he did have a mini breakout a couple weeks ago. What's going on with Rashad Penny? Is he still sort of the running back of the future, or is he going to be in the backseat to Chris Carson for a while?
I think as long as Chris Carson's playing well, it's Carson's job to lose. They definitely wanted to get Penny more involved. You saw that a little bit before the Chargers game. John Schneider, the GM, talked about how they wanted to get Penny involved. And so he's kind of taken over that second running back role ahead of Mike Davis. He's won that out. He played really well against the Rams. Had a few good runs throughout these last few weeks, but only had 10 snaps against the Panthers. And so they're taking their time with Penny. Running backs, you know, they don't usually have the longest careers, as we both know. And so, you know, I don't think they're in any rush to kind of force the issue with Penny, but they did want to integrate him a little more into the offense. And so we've seen an expanded role, but, you know, in these last few weeks, at least we've seen the talent that justifies selecting him high, or that he's a good player, and so you get a good player selecting him that high. You know, we can talk about the value all you want, and you know, I'm sure we'll be in agreement that, you know, they could have had better value in the first round than maybe get him in the second. But you know, he's a talented player. We've seen that at least during some points of the season. So, you know, I don't think anything's lost with Penny. I think it's definitely for the future. But you know, when you have a running back room that's as deep as the Seahawks right now, that's a good thing, because, you know, as well as anybody, you know, running backs can, you know, go down at, you know, an instant.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm definitely happy with the way the running back room looks this year compared to last year, where, you know, it seemed like everybody was getting hurt. There was no really consistent runner. And so I think Mike Davis was the most consistent runner, the leading rusher out of the running back room for the Seahawks. And so that's why he earned a spot on this roster and the second running back role throughout the early part of the season. But I'm happy with the state of the room right now. Now, I think this is a good place to take a short break. We'll talk about one of our sponsors really quick and then come back with the rest of this Crossover Wednesday episode. Now, guys, you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Now, listen up. It's BlueChew.com. That's blue, like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them at any time, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our promo code Locked On. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew. .com promo code Locked On to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, and we are back with Locked On Crossover Wednesday. You have Locked On Seahawks, Locked On 49ers with Grant Goldberg and Brian Peacock. And now, we last left you talking about the Seahawks offense and the state of that, but we're going to shift the focus over to the San Francisco 49ers offense. And Brian, I have a question for you right off the bat. You know, you have this this quarterback play. You go from Jimmy Garoppolo to C.J. Beathard, and then Nick Mullins, who's kind of come onto the scene. Now, I want to get your feel on how the quarterback play has been over the last couple weeks, and what Seahawks fans should expect when Nick Mullins goes under center.
Yeah, Nick Mullins is a very simple scouting report. I think the first thing that's obvious is he's not a height, weight, speed athlete, and that's why he was not heavily recruited out of high school, even though he was in the state of Alabama and was the Gatorade Player of the Year. The back-to-back Gatorade Players of the Year in Alabama were Jameis Winston and Nick Mullins. And so, yeah, and so he ends up going to Southern Miss and breaks all of Brett Favre's records there, and still NFL teams aren't really noticing, and nobody drafts him, and the 49ers quarterback coach notices this kid and brings him in, And they sign him as an undrafted free agent. And the thing that's clear is that he does his homework. And he was ready to jump in on Thursday Night Football primetime against the Raiders. And really was eye-opening. It was like, okay, he looked more comfortable in this offense than C.J. Beathard had at all over two seasons. And so that was the first thing that I loved seeing about him. Is like, okay, he's been doing his work behind the scenes, pre-snap reads, going through progressions. It just is quicker. Mentally processing is quicker. Now, that said, he just doesn't have the physical ability to be, you know, a starting NFL quarterback. You can see it when he really tries to drive the ball outside the numbers. He doesn't have a strong arm, and so he's not going to carry a team. But what I think he can do is be that game manager. He's not afraid to sling it either, which I think could get him into trouble at times. He's thrown a couple interceptions the last couple of weeks. I could see one of those disastrous games coming down the stretch here for the 49ers where Mullins tries to do too much because he's not afraid to sling it and throws like three or four picks or something like that. But generally, anticipation, he gets the ball out on time, and we've seen a few plays. There was that one to George Kittle a few weeks ago where Kittle made a one-handed catch in between three defenders and then took it 70 yards. And that was a crazy throw under pressure to fit it in a tight window. He's not afraid to let it go, and he can make some tight window throws, especially in the middle of the field when he doesn't have to really get everything into a throw. But I've loved what I've seen from Nick Mullins, and I think he earned the spot over C.J. Beathard. So now it's a battle to see who's going to be that long-term backup to Jimmy Garoppolo, because obviously the 49ers don't want either one of those quarterbacks playing.
You find yourself as an NFL team, you never want your quarterback to go down, but when you can find that sturdy option as a backup, you know, the game manager type, like you've been saying, that's always a welcome thing. I think, you know, when you find maybe like a Josh McCown type to back up your quarterback, you know, I think you're in good shape when you talk about your quarterback room. And so, yeah, that was a great, great scouting report on Nick Mullins. And I definitely learned a lot hearing about him. And there's some opportunities for him to exploit, maybe a little further down the field, towards Tedrick Thompson's area. But, you know, you talked about Reuben Foster, and I think, you know, it's never a comfortable conversation for a lot of people to have about arrests, you know, featuring domestic violence and things of that nature. But, you know, I think it's warranted that we do talk about Reuben Foster and how it changes the outlook of this San Francisco 49ers defense.
Yeah, and it's such a bizarre situation with Reuben Foster, because his personality, when you see him in interviews and everyone seems to love him, and the team really was attracted to his personality in the draft, because when you talk to him, he's got a smile on his face and you're like, well, this guy can't be all that bad. And he just continually makes bad decisions when he's away from the team, and even at the team hotel, which I think was really the final straw with why the 49ers, they didn't care about, oh, is he guilty of this thing? It was like, dude, you're getting arrested at the team hotel. You got to go. And so I think that was really the final straw for John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, and Lynch talking about protecting the team, and he's not doing that. But and actually, a friend of mine was asking about Reuben Foster, and I was like, do you remember the 1990s movie Encino Man? And it was, that's what he reminds me of. Brendan Fraser's character in Encino Man. He's like the life of the party, but then it just zero life skills. Like the way he was brought up is just a rough situation for him. And so unfortunately the 49ers didn't have a Pauly Shore to help him out. And it ended up being an alternate ending to Encino Man with Reuben Foster. But that's sort of what you get with him, is just he just lacks some life skills. And unfortunately he wasn't able to come around while he was with the 49ers. But as far as the on field aspect of it, he hadn't really lived up to what the star talent I thought he was going to show in 2018, because he definitely flashed that as a rookie, and he's been dealing with a lot of injuries throughout his career. And that's another thing from college. So that was, you know, double red flags, I think, with Reuben Foster. And I think that's a learning lesson for the young GM in John Lynch, is avoiding some red flags like that. And so with the injuries and the off-field stuff, he really never had an opportunity to be the star linebacker I think the 49ers thought he was going to be. And instead, the 49ers have a young budding star linebacker in Fred Warner that they drafted in the third round this year. So the emergence of Fred Warner being that middle linebacker, and they've put the green dot on his helmet from day one, and he's been able to really, I think, ease that pain of losing Reuben Foster now, because they still have a really good young linebacker. Maybe he doesn't have quite the level of upside that Reuben Foster might have had, but they got a really solid long-term starter in Fred Warner, and Pro Football Focus just had an article about how good he's played as a rookie. So that really eases the pain there. And so now the 49ers have to figure out what they're going to do with Malcolm Smith long term. And Malcolm Smith's going to be the guy next to Fred Warner the rest of this year. And then the Niners are going to have to either go into free agency or the draft and probably try to find somebody that is better than Malcolm Smith to play that weak side linebacker spot long term.
Yeah, Malcolm Smith is a guy that Seahawks fans are obviously familiar with. There's some happy memories, and then if Seahawks fans, you know, don't put the rose-colored glasses on, you know, a lot of his tenure was just really inconsistent play. Mm-hmm. He'd flash it sometimes. In that Super Bowl run in 2013 going into 2014, Smith played, you know, out of his mind in the second half of the season leading up to the playoffs and through it. But the rest of his tenure was just super up and down. You never got the same player week in and week out. So, yeah, definitely if I'm a 49ers fan, I'm looking to get a little bit more of a consistent option right there. And since I'm talking about guys with Seahawks ties on the Niners, how's Cassius Marsh doing for the 49ers? I'm sure Seahawks fans would appreciate getting a little check-in on him.
Yeah, I've kind of crushed Cassius Marsh on this podcast numerous times, not because of him as the player, and it's not his fault. It's that he's been put in this position, and the 49ers, I can't remember if it was John Lynch or Kyle Shanahan now, I think it was Shanahan, had a quote after the 49ers didn't draft an edge rusher like everybody in the world thought they were going to do. And he's like, hey, you got to be pretty good to beat out Cassius Marsh. And 49ers fans sort of looked at each other like, wait, what? Are we talking about the same journeyman, like, rotational guy here? And so, I mean, he's been exactly what you thought Cassius Marsh would be. And he's a fine player. And he's had a couple sacks this year, and he does the karate kick celebration. And I kind of shake my head every time, but it's like, he's not the impact edge rusher that he's being asked to be as really the number one edge guy on passing downs. So it's been a huge disappointment that he's the guy that's been tasked with that job. But really what he should be, it would be a fine player, is a guy who comes in and is a rotational guy and plays a little bit of defensive end for you. But aside from that, he's been pretty much what you would expect from Cassius Marsh, and definitely not a guy that you dislike or a guy that you don't want on the team. He's just been asked to do more than he's capable. We got to take a little break here, and then I want to drill you about a few more things. Okay, here we are back with another Wednesday crossover episode. Brian Peacock here of Locked On 49ers. I'm with Grant Goldberg of Locked On Seahawks. Last we saw Earl Thomas, he was being carted off the field, flipping the bird back toward, I don't think, the sideline of, or maybe the front office. I don't know where that bird was headed, but what are the thoughts? Like, all right, there's multiple things I want to ask you about with the defense of the Seahawks. First of all, how are they playing so well without all these guys we talked about? Have they ditched the old cover three scheme a little bit and started playing different because they have different pieces, or are they still playing that same scheme as they always were without Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman?
It's a little bit of a different scheme. You see a little more cover two, you know, Tampa two sometimes, but you know, it's all anchored around Bobby Wagner. He's at the center of the defense, and I think he's allowed the defense to play like a little bit in the sense that Earl Thomas allows the defense to play a little more fast and loose because they had that point of security on the field. The point of security has just changed. It went from, you know, in deep center field to let's just say second base. We're going to stay on baseball terms, but Bobby Wagner's been this he's just been incredible. He's been Bobby Wagner for the Seahawks defense, and that's what you need. So much change and so much turnover in a defense, just that point which you can rally around is really helpful. Granted, you know, the defense has done a good job in drafting some cornerbacks and Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers, who's been a great surprise for the Seahawks this year. Now you have, you still have a good defense. You just don't have the names. Bradley McDougald's been lights out for the Seahawks at strong safety. He's been playing really well since last year when Cam Chancellor went down. And so, you know, you have playmakers at every level of the defense. You have Frank Clark and Jerron Reed at the defensive line. You have Bobby Wagner and hopefully a KJ Wright that's healthy at linebacker spot. And then you have Bradley McDougald holding things down the secondary. And so, you know, they're able to play well. They're able to just play that Seahawks defense, keep everything in front of you, make them beat you deep if they're going to beat you. And so, you know, I think when you have just a good amount of talent at everywhere, every spot in the field, and uncertainty at some other positions. Maybe you want a rusher opposite of Frank Clark, and you want, you know, a safety opposite of Bradley McDougald. But, you know, they're making do with what they have, and, you know, what they have is a lot of good young players who have really bought into the scheme and have played lights out.
Yeah, that's so key, replacing the talent when you lose some names like that. And just because you might not recognize the names doesn't mean those guys haven't developed and play ready to go. And I think 49ers fans are having a rough time with Robert Saleh's scheme, former coach with the Seahawks, and the development. And so that's one of the big things that I was surprised about, and seeing the Seahawks play without these big names and seeing the 49ers defense sort of stall out and not take that next step and develop. And I think they just need more talent, maybe more time together will really help. And I think a lot of 49ers fans are kind of eyeballing. They're like, well, we already got Richard Sherman. Let's just complete the LOB part two and bring Earl Thomas in next year, because if we can't develop or draft a free safety, we might as well just get the prototype for this scheme. So that's where 49ers fans are at right now, eyeballing that situation. Just and maybe a little bit more salt in the wound for Seahawks fans if the 49ers are able to pull that off too.
Oh man, that'd be a nightmare. but yeah, that bird was directed towards the Seahawks sideline. You know who it was directed towards, I'm not sure, but you look at the situations all around the league when it comes to guys holding out and wanting some job security and security financially. Le'Veon Bell is a great example, and you know that's what Earl Thomas feared. He feared getting hurt and risking this opportunity to put his skills on display once again to kind of earn this next contract. I still think the Seahawks should have gave him that contract extension, and maybe if he's in camp and he's with the team longer, then maybe that doesn't shake out the way it shook out. But you know, it's the way it happened, the way the cookie crumbled. But I think that Earl Thomas, wherever he lands, you know, I think it's really unlikely at this point that he comes back to the Seahawks. Wherever he lands, he's going to be a great player. We've seen him come back from this injury once before, and it's not a matter of if he comes back, you know, and plays like Earl Thomas, but when he comes back from this injury. So, you know, if 49ers got their hands on him, it's going to allow their scheme just to absolutely take off. Having that security blanket, that sense of security with Earl Thomas on the field, it's second to none. You know, when you talk about secondary, it allows everybody to play just a lot more loose. Like I was saying with Bobby Wagner in the middle of the field, it just allows everybody to play free and not carefree, but, you know, just not having to worry about over the top as much because you have this generational talent at safety. So, you know, I was gutted for Earl Thomas as a player, as, you know, as a fan. So I hope he lands somewhere where he can succeed and the Seahawks don't have to see him all too much.
Yes. Somewhere where he can succeed that's not San Francisco, right?
Right. Yeah. Just, you know, put him in the AFC maybe. I don't know. Kansas City was, you know, in trade talks for him. So him going to Kansas City would probably be a cheat code and allow them to build the defense around him. That would just be something the whole rest of the league would just kind of put their face in their hands and kind of question why they're going to try.
Yeah, exactly. And there, you know, there's some talk about him going back to Texas and maybe the Dallas Cowboys would be eyeballing him and Chris Richard over there. Actually, that's something I think we have a little bit of time here to talk about this. So Chris Richard, former defensive backs coach and defensive coordinator with the Seahawks, a lot of 49ers fans are thinking, okay, maybe the 49ers didn't hire the right former assistant from the Seahawks, and seeing what's going on with the Cowboys defensive backfield and how good they've played this year with Chris Richard coaching over there, and thinking, well, maybe they need to go that route and try to hire someone like that to come in and play defensive coordinator for the 49ers and still keep the same scheme because the scheme is sound. Maybe they're not getting coached up just right. What is your take and your angle on Chris Richard as a coach and what happened with him and his short-lived tenure as defensive coordinator after he was so great and instrumental in the Legion of Boom?
He was a guy that everybody loved in Seattle. All the players loved him. He was, like you said, defensive backs guy. So, you know, when your whole team rallies around that position group, you know, the defense is going to succeed. Now, he was a little more happy to blitz more than a Dan Quinn or Gus Bradley was a little like Chris Richard in that sense. But you know, you had this, you know, defense that, you know, had this swagger, and you know, when they stepped on the field, like, everybody felt it. You know, and you can make the argument that the Seahawks defense was going to look good regardless of the defensive coordinator. But his schemes were good. You know, the amount of blitzing was good. But you want your defensive coordinator to take chances and be aggressive. And I think Chris Richard did a good job of balancing that. And I've been happy to see him succeed in Dallas. I know the Cowboys aren't, you know, everybody's favorite team, but you know, seeing a guy get his opportunity again after losing it in Seattle, I was really happy to see the way that he's turned around the defense in Dallas, and has been, you know, instrumental in getting Dallas to where they're at, you know, leading their division, and really the defense is what is keeping this Dallas team winning on the road. You know, that's what you need going into these road games, and that's what we've seen out of the Cowboys. So now I've been super impressed by him as the Cowboys DC.
Yeah, absolutely. And so at some point the 49ers got to stop just poaching Seahawks leftovers, and it hasn't really worked out that great so far too. So that's maybe another reason why, but maybe a little extra bit of fuel to the fire of this. I think, you know, it's not what it once was as far as Seahawks versus 49ers, obviously, when they're really good and it was Harbaugh and Carroll, but there's still a lot of those same feelings that have carried on, even though it's not as, at least from the 49ers standpoint, not holding up their end of the bargain as being as competitive in these matchups. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a really cool contest. What kind of a prediction you got here for Sunday?
Yeah, it's Sunday afternoon, not Sunday night anymore because it got flexed out of Sunday night football.
Sorry.
And rightfully so. But I think the Seahawks are going to be able to take this game. I think it's going to be a little more comfortable than the Seahawks past couple matchups, you know, coming off of the Panthers win, coming off the Packers win. I think, you know, obviously you can never sleep on an opponent in the National Football League. Nothing's ever a given. And who knows, the 49ers are going to play up because it's a division matchup. And like you said, you know, it would be nice to, you know, get a win over somebody that's in your division. But, you know, that said, I do think the Seahawks win, and it's probably by a score of maybe 24-10. There's never really a moment that the Seahawks have to really sweat it out through the game. But the 49ers do put some points on the board. They make it interesting at, you know, a couple points. But I think the Seahawks win and a little bit comfortably.
No, I'm right there with you. Yeah, I think you nailed it. I can't really, and looking at the games down the stretch, if the 49ers can beat the Giants and the Bucks, it's going to be really hard to predict any wins for the 49ers going forward, and the Seahawks are playing good football right now, so definitely this is not going to be one of those, and the Seahawks are favored by 10.5, and I think that's the reason why. And against the spread, maybe the 49ers can keep it close within double digits, but yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty easy Seahawks win. I'm with you.
Yeah, but no, it's always fun, like you said, to see Seahawks and 49ers take the field. If anything, you can, you know, reminisce on the matchups that they did have, the championship game, and, well, on Seahawks fans' parts. But yeah, it's always fun, and you can look back on, you know, what a tremendous rivalry that really was. The teams would go back and forth, and, you know, it's really, really good competitive football. Teams that really mirrored each other. I think, you know, at certain points in that run, the Seahawks and 49ers were the two best teams in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that they were in the same division, and we got to see them beat the crap out of each other every time they played. So, no, it's always fun to see the two teams. Maybe it's not what it was, but, you know, like I said, you know, there's the nostalgia in it. And I guess there's nostalgia for something that happened a few years ago. I don't know.
Yeah, but there definitely is. And if it comes down to sort of a goal line play at the end of the game, hopefully Pete Carroll returns the favor and decides to throw it at Richard Sherman instead of running the ball.
Yeah, no, you guys can execute the Richard Sherman, Malcolm Smith play.
Yeah,
like that's no problem for you guys. So maybe it'll be David Moore that they target in the corner of the end zone. And the two guys come up big again. Who knows? But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing the two teams face off against each other once again.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be fun. And sometimes the one thing I will say about that big line and the 10.5 points is that sometimes you can really throw that out with division opponents, and they see each other so often. You play each other twice a year, and it's why you see these teams split so often. If this was at home for the 49ers, and it was the second time they'd seen each other, I would say maybe there's a better chance for the 49ers pulling off an upset. But yeah, can't see it in this one, but it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And for what you just said about the two teams knowing each other so well, I think you can probably attribute that most to the coaching staff, because the roster turnover for both teams have been so high, and you got a lot of different players taking the field, and so that's largely up to the coaching staff and getting these guys prepared for these familiar foes.
We are running out of time here, Grant. Always a pleasure chatting with you on these crossover episodes, and let's do it again later this year.
All right. Thank you.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Thanks, everybody, for listening. My guest tomorrow will be John Ledyard of Locked On NFL Draft and the Draft Network. He had his plan for fixing the 49ers this offseason, some things that matched up with my plan. If you listened to the podcast a few weeks ago, my 5-point plan to fixing the 49ers, some similarities there. So we'll talk to John about that, about the NFL Draft, about the 49ers, and what the team could possibly do in free agency. All that tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.